words I thrive, I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is housegrown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
But call it a reality, because there's no illusions. That's how the song's supposed to end. Anyway, thank you all for tuning back into the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. I'm really happy to be back and alive. Yeah, we're dealing with the crazy weather now too. I know I was just saying last week, yeah, we're dealing with a heat wave of 80 degrees, but now we got wildfires just outside of the town where the anti-media office is located, so it's not gonna come down here, but some of my friends are being affected, being evacuated and stuff, and that's one of the problems we have out here in Southern California. Not only do we have this horrible drought and basically lack of weather, but we got wildfires, and they always hit around this time of year, and there's always a bunch of houses that get burned down and people get evacuated. They always go out and rebuild, but really unfortunate if you're unlucky enough to get caught in one of those wildfires. And you know, fortunately, like I said, it's kind of a regular occurrence here at this time of the year, so people are already kind of, you know, well versed on the evacuation routes and, you know, preparations and stuff. So normally people don't really die for the most part, and you know, they make it out safely, but it's just, you know, a bunch of destruction, and it really sucks. But we're going to be talking a little bit about what's going on in Louisiana. We got some stuff we're working on at the anti-media as far as, you know, how we can try to get some help out to these people, because it's really really unfortunate that the media, I don't know why, but they're just not taking this thing seriously in Louisiana. I mean, I guess we could speculate a little bit about that during the show tonight. And if we have anyone listening tonight down in Louisiana, please call in and let us know what you guys are dealing with down there, because I know I've never been trapped in a flood, and you know, I've lived in San Diego my whole life. We've never really had more than, I don't know, a half inch of rain in a day. At least that I can remember. So yeah, I have no clue what it's like. If you want to call in, let us know what's going on. 718-717-8296. Make sure you mute your microphone and turn off the radio if you get on the line, and we'll come to you based on your area code. Anyway, before we get started, I want to introduce my longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, DB?
Not much, Nick. Just, I don't know, really busy recently, so you know, trying to keep up with the world events is taking a back seat right now. But, you know, more media circus. Looks like Trump's just imploding on purpose. And I think we can assume he's probably a DNC plant at this point, especially because so much money went from the Clinton Foundation to him and to Cruz, too. And now coming up with this $25 or $30 million tax break Christie threw at Trump. I mean, Trump's making billions out of this.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of what started off as like this conspiracy theory, and we talked about this way back at the beginning because, as you recall, if you remember very way back at the beginning when Trump first announced that he was going to start running for presidency, the news came out that he was kind of encouraged to run by Bill Clinton in a phone call. I think the Washington Post broke that story. This was must have been about a year ago or so. And there's plenty of rumors and theories going around that Trump was some kind of, you know, false flag Republican candidate that was going to hand the reins off to Hillary Clinton. And a lot of people kind of dismissed that. But now looking at the implosion here going on with Trump, and if you look at the timing of every time he makes like a huge gaffe or something, it really does kind of go along with the timing of whenever there's a big scandal for Hillary Clinton. And there's no shortage of scandals on that side of things. But every time, you know, every time Clinton, you know, there's a scandal, like for instance, when WikiLeaks first put out that bounty on information for that DNC staffer that was killed in Washington D.C. and people were starting to speculate, hey, maybe this guy was the guy that leaked the files on the DNC emails, or maybe, you know, other people said that he was going to testify at the FBI. That claim has somewhat been debunked. I haven't followed up on it, but at least. The WikiLeaks put out a bounty on this guy's on any information that would lead to an arrest. That was very suspicious. People started talking about, well, maybe this guy was the DNC leaker. All of a sudden, he's dead. And literally the next day, when all those rumors started spreading around, the next day Trump hints at Hillary Clinton. Maybe a Second Amendment person should assassinate Hillary Clinton. And he didn't say it in those words, but I mean that's basically the gist of what he was saying. And that was just the day after. You know, all these other, you know, assassination rumors started spreading about this DNC guy. And then, you know, it wasn't, a week later when Julian Assange was basically, you know, more or less hinted at, yeah, maybe this guy was the DNC leaker that leaked these emails to WikiLeaks. But, I mean, it just seems so coordinated. Every time Hillary gets wrapped up in a scandal, Trump one-ups it with something stupid, says something dumb. And now this has become a mainstream narrative that maybe Trump is trying to lose. I mean, who was it yesterday or 2 days ago? I think it was Michael Moore put out this big op-ed piece on Alternet, and it got picked up by a bunch of news outlets saying that, you know, maybe Trump isn't trying to win. Maybe he just thought it was a big joke and a PR stunt. It was going to help his, his Hollywood, you know, stuff. What's that TV show that Trump has?
He was The Apprentice. But
yeah, The Apprentice.
He made a lot of money off that. He made something like $200 million in profit. The problem with Trump is that a lot of his schemes go bust, and he's used the system so much that he can't get loans anymore in the U.S., and he's been pandering and pilfering to these Russian oligarchs to get more money for his construction schemes and stuff to protect his own money. The guy, I think, is worth something like north of $800 million. He's not quite a billionaire, but he's hoping that this will bring, you know, some of the fortune that his father provided to him that he lost over the years. This will bring it back in spades with book deals and more shows. And he doesn't want to win. Why would he want to win? He's going to make way more money if he doesn't. And that's all the guy cares about. So he's an obvious plant. It was probably something that they came up with over that golf game where all the pictures come up with Giuliani and the other guy. I can't remember his name now, but
Bloomberg probably.
Yeah, Bloomberg, something. Exactly. So all the guys golfing, you know, in Scotland or wherever the hell they were after their secret rights meeting or whatever they did over there. I mean, it's a club, man. And one guy scratches one guy's back and another. And, you know, what does it matter if Trump's in the pocket of the oligarchs when Hillary gives 1/5 of our uranium to what's supposed to be our enemies? There's no possible way the Russian government is at odds with the American government. They probably own each other on so many different levels that they scratch each other's backs, and they just care about the money flow to continue. But, you know, the problem is the rank and file, dude. Like, the actual military guys, I mean, once they start seeing that they're going to get put into a meat grinder in the Middle East to fight a real proxy war, I think that's when it starts to become an issue.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It's a big club, and it's a big club, and you ain't in it. I mean, who else better can tell this story than George Carlin? Here we go.
There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. Reason. There's a
man. Prophetic words from Carlin. I guess this stuff's been going on for a long time. It's not new, but you know, now it's kind of out in the open, especially with the internet.
What people need to realize when he says this too is the president's not very important. The president is middle management. The president is the face of what people think is the legitimate government, but it of course defers to the shadow, and even more so defers to the banking military complex. So what he's saying is true. There's a big club, and you can't earn your way in no matter what. You're born in. You must have the correct bloodline. Every single president, including Hillary, including Trump, including Obama, are all directly related to, I believe it's Edward VIII, but you might need to look that up. And it goes without fail. It does not derive from that bloodline, no matter what.
There was one president that wasn't part of the relative club.
It was found out he was. So it's all of them. It's all of them. And, the little girl that did the genealogy, she messed up one relative, and it turned out it was shared with another president, so of course he's blood related as well.
Another thing that's funny is that we covered this a few months ago on the anti-media. In fact, it may have been late last year, about how Trump and Clinton are actually kind of like distant cousins. And I saw this funny meme the other day. I think it was on We Are Change on their Facebook page. It was a meme of Bush and Kerry, and I think it was, what was it, back in 2004 when Bush ran against Kerry, I think it was. And the meme was saying, the moment you realize that these two guys are cousins and they belong to the same secret society, and then they pretended that they were running against each other. I mean, it was just hilarious. But it was so true. I mean, Bush, Kerry, they're cousins. They're both members of the Skull and Bones, which is this crazy frat boy club for rich people in one of these Ivy League colleges. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to crack that the real glass ceiling. I mean, Hillary Clinton talks about this glass ceiling all the time, and for her, I mean, that thing just it doesn't exist because she is part of this big club. But for, you know, a guy like Bernie Sanders and a guy, you know, people that are outside of this mainstream political system, there's a major glass ceiling there that they're never going to really be able to break through. As long as enough people still subscribe to this kind of false power structure that we're being ruled by. And, you know, that's the big problem here. We can't just sit here and, like, think that you know, we're going to vote for Bernie Sanders, or that we're going to vote for Gary Johnson and stuff, and think that it's going to like fix what's going on here. The problem is much deeper than that. But it's also a simple problem. I mean, the main problem is that people are allowing their, you know, giving their consent to this system, you know, and as many people talk shit. I mean, how many people do you know that are going to, that would be willing to complain about politicians? I mean, let's forget about the election cycle right now, and let's just say regular, you know, in a regular time, let's just say with coworkers, and you're talking about politics, and people, oh yeah, Congress is a waste of time. They're all pieces of shit. You know, Congress has what, a 9% approval rating, plus or minus. I mean, it fluctuates, but stays around 10%. You know, everybody is pretty much in agreement that Congress sucks, that the politicians don't represent us very well. But in the end, they have this cognitive dissonance where it's like, oh, well, but you know, yeah, they suck, but we still have to do what they say, and we still have to follow their rules, and we still have to give them power, and we still have to cast a vote. Now, the ultimate cognitive dissonance is going on right now where, you know, there's this big debate, especially I've been seeing it with my, like, progressive friends and stuff, that many of which were, like, you know, diehard Bernie supporters, and now they're saying, you know what, I'm not going to support Hillary, I'm going to support Jill Stein. And the common argument I see is like, well, if you vote for Jill Stein, you might as well be voting for Trump, you know, and it's the ultimate exercise in cognitive dissonance where, you know, people claim that we have a democratic society in the United States and we have a free voting system. And then at the same time, they say, if you vote for one person, you're actually voting for somebody else. It's like, wait, that's not how this works. That's not how any of this works. You vote for somebody, your vote is casting for that person you vote for, not for someone else. But, you know, in the end, it's kind of like this crazy self-defeating argument, because on one hand, they're saying, well, we have to be democratic and we have to support Hillary Clinton because, you know, she's the democratic candidate and she's not going to be a fascist like Trump. But on the other hand, you're saying, well, our democracy doesn't work because if you don't vote for Clinton, well, you might as well just be voting for Trump, you know. And so it's a self-defeating argument. I'm so sick of seeing it, and I saw it prevailing in 2012, you know, back when I was a voter and I was pushing for a third party. And I think back then, I think it was actually Gary Johnson who I was like hoping, you know, who I ended up casting my vote for.
Well, what about Ron Paul even? I mean, he threatened to split the Republican Party similarly to the way Bernie did with the Democrats. And I wish it had happened, because instead you get the awful Tea Partiers, which are even more conservative and not progressive. So you made the loony bin of the side of the far, far right legitimized, and there's been nothing to counterbalance the Democratic Party, which is just being pulled into the Republican Party. There's not there's no progressive party but the Greens, and they're not legitimate yet.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary Clinton is basically the Republican nominee, and Trump is basically this neo-nationalist nominee. I mean, the Republican Party is kind of it doesn't have a candidate this time around. Trump is not a Republican. Trump isn't getting support from the Republican establishment. Hillary Clinton is. You know, so Clinton is basically she's like the candidate of like, let's stop pretending there's a difference between the Republicans and Democrats, and let's just all vote for Hillary Clinton, because who gives a shit either way? It's going to be the same thing. That's basically the Clinton candidacy, and these poor people that are so brainwashed by this narrative that, you know, if you don't vote for Clinton, you're voting for Trump. They fail to see just the complete irony in this situation, because, you know, Clinton stands against pretty much everything that anyone who could, like, actually describe themselves as a leftist would be standing against. And Clinton embodies all that stuff. I mean, Wall Street, big money, imperialism, inequality, I mean, racial inequity. She's done things, policies, rhetoric, and many, many things that have exacerbated all of these problems. I mean, now she has this rhetoric where she's like, you know, she comes off as the lesser of two evils. Don't get me wrong. She definitely comes off as the lesser of two evils. Trump comes off like a total fascist. And like DB, like we were talking about, maybe it's by design. Like, maybe Trump is really just trying to lose this thing. Maybe this was the plan, you know, maybe this was the plan from the beginning, or maybe, like Michael Moore was saying, he just realized, oh shit, this is actually happening. I never thought I was going to get this far. You know, maybe I shouldn't have done this. Let me just go ahead and throw this election, because I never took it seriously.
Because it doesn't matter who wins, Nick, really. It doesn't. Because it wouldn't have even mattered if Bernie won, because Bernie would have continued the policy of defending the empire, or a.k.a. the country. See, to get to an anti-war stance would require something from within changing overnight, almost completely. Like, maybe the top of the leadership gets replaced overnight. And there's always been talk about, what is the military-industrial complex? What does the Pentagon do with the vast resources at their command, if not continue to grab more, to try to create the long-heralded Pax Americana, a.k.a. Manifest Destiny, into the Pacific and Asia, and eventually taking all of the world, or at least influencing it. But the alternative would be the swords to plowshares idea, where because our technology could be reverted to peaceful means and then eventually to exploration of space, we could get away from needing to have war for resources and just go to other planets instead. So that's kind of like our crossroads we're coming up to here, because if given a choice between sharing everything the world can provide, even if that means you can't be quite as excessive as even me and you are, Nick, as Americans, you know, living maybe a little bit below our means, essentially, and, you know, trying to get to a place where we're not polluting anymore and being carbon neutral at the very least. And then from there, allowing the next generation to do the hard work of actually getting off the planet to make sure our species survives. I think that's what we need to make a decision of, versus World War III, which all the elites want, because then they get all of the world to themselves. People, I find it funny, Nick, when people think they're not going to do that because it ruins the world, and then they can't come up and live in it. They'll just be stuck in their little bases. I'm like, they can clean up that radiation anytime they want. I mean, they've known how to make it for 70 years. You don't think they figured out how to clean it up yet? Of course they can.
Well, you bring up a good point, because, you know, I know there's a lot of Bernie true believers that listen to our show and stuff. And, you know, I know that some of the people that we've had on the show, you know, we're going for Bernie Sanders, and we've had plenty of guests. And, you know, I know, DB, you were doing some work trying to help on that effort and stuff. But as you mentioned, I mean, even if a guy like Sanders, who is, you know, at least kind of anti-establishment, even if a person like that did get elected, it would be very unlikely that they would actually, you know, stop the empire. Because if you look back, I mean, first of all, looking back to the 2000 elections to George Bush, I mean, George Bush ran on a very humble foreign policy. He ran against Bill Clinton's nation building. You know what I mean? So George Bush was the first candidate that was going to, you know, take us, you know, stop us from nation building. Let me see if I could. Let me see if I could pull a clip. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I'm getting some feedback from you, Nick.
It really depends on.
I'm working anyway. All right, let me see if I can get this feedback fixed. Let me see. Tell me this video comes through here.
It really depends upon how our nation conducts itself in foreign policy. If we're an arrogant nation, they'll resent us. If we're a humble nation but strong, they'll welcome us. And our nation stands alone right now in the world in terms of power. And that's why we've got to be humble. Yeah, I'm not so sure the role of the United States is to go around the world and say this is the way it's got to be. I just don't think it's the role of the United States to walk into a country and say, we do it this way, so should you. Really?
Did you hear that? Did that come through?
Well, I mean, it's ridiculous, because I don't know if you've seen any of the recent videos, documentaries of what's undergone culturally in Iraq as a result of essentially destroying all opposition, even culturally. You know, you have the younger generation now that's into hip-hop, that's not dressing traditionally, that's not going to mosque. And they have changed that country profoundly and created it into I don't want to say it's a puppet state or a vassal state, but it's about as close as maybe you can get without, you know, completely taking over and having a military base every 5 miles or something. But it's crazy, man. We absolutely have gone in and not only told countries what they can and can't do, but changed the way they think, and we allow them to think, and literally killing anyone that doesn't think what we want them to think.
Yeah, dude. And so, you know, Bush ran on this policy of, like, let's not go and project our force in a forceful way and tell everyone how to do this and do that. Back in 2000, that was a popular idea. And of course, that election was notoriously, you know, people want to call it rigged or flawed or, you know, Bush Gore, the whole controversy.
Well, the voting
down machines
in Florida came on, right, Nick?
Yeah, but you know, if you look back at it, Gore was never actually the opposition. That's the thing. Gore found out about what went on down there, and he didn't do nothing about it. He wasn't opposition. He was just a false opposition. And the whole time, it was kind of just like this election here, where it's like Clinton is eventually going to be the nominee. Back in 2000, Bush was going to eventually be the nominee, and Gore wasn't going to get in the way. There's a great documentary on all the voting inconsistencies down in Florida. And there's this woman that really took it personally and did a bunch of investigation, got a bunch of evidence, presented it to the Gore campaign, and the Gore campaign was like, you know what, just be quiet on all this, and, you know, let's just let this blow over, and, you know, we're just going to let Bush win. And that, you know, to me, I was like, oh my God, like, okay, well, Gore wasn't an actual opposition. It was a controlled opposition. It was, like, all fake. And, you know, they were going to give Bush the election no matter what. Anyway, going back to just the rhetoric here, you know, Bush ran on this humble foreign policy that wasn't in a nation building because, you know, Bill Clinton was the nation builder. He was too hawkish on foreign policy. So Bush ran on a less hawkish platform. Fast forward, you know, 9/11 happens, and then, you know, we got to go all around the world fighting the war on terror. And, you know, Bush got a pass on that. The media helped him conduct all the anti-Islam propaganda, all the pro-war propaganda, and New York Times, CBS, every single news station, NBC, all of them, they helped him do it. And all that stuff became unpopular because, you know, look, people in general, I don't think Americans are like people that love violence or love war. They just get manipulated into it. After 9/11, I mean, it was major, major fear-mongering, and everybody was sold on this idea that we got to go blow up, first of all, Afghanistan, and second of all, Iraq. Everybody was sold on this idea, and even I remember as a teenager watching this going on TV, and I'm like, we need to go into Iraq, and I was like excited about, you know, us bombing them. I couldn't wait for it to happen. And, you know, that's just the power of the fear-mongering and the media brainwashing. That war, it ended up becoming unpopular, and it became so expensive, and people were dying, and it just wasn't going well. If you remember towards the end of George Bush's term, 2006, 2007, I mean, he was so unpopular, it was ridiculous. Then here comes Obama, and Obama's running on this, you know, hope and change, anti-war. Man, he was so anti-war, it was ridiculous. He was going to end the war in Afghanistan. He was going to end the war in Iraq. He was going to stop the nation building. He was going to stop all these bad wars and stuff. And Obama comes into town, and he gets elected. And, you know, we just posted this article yesterday from one of our new foreign policy writers. On the anti-media, Barack Obama went from the Peace Prize winner to the world's biggest arms dealer in 8 years. So Obama, you know, he ran on this rhetoric of anti-war, you know, stopping all this foreign intervention. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009. I mean, everybody thought Obama's going to come in, he's going to stop all these bullshit wars, he's going to end the war in Iraq that should have never taken place. And the only thing Obama has done is expanded on George Bush's foreign policy. And he's, you know, expanded on our foreign interventions overseas. I mean, think about Libya, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, all the countries that now Obama has been just drone striking and creating chaos and, you know, creating more terrorism and stuff, all that stuff that Obama has been doing and Hillary Clinton has been advising him to do and stuff for the longest time. You know, so going back to the point here about Bernie Sanders or these other hope and change type of candidates, I mean, they're not, if they do get into office, if they're genuine, it's very, very unlikely they're going to get into office. And I think looking back at the genuine people, I think like Dennis Kucinich and Ron Paul, and to a lesser extent Bernie Sanders, pretty genuine about a lot of their ideas. And therefore, they're never going to have a chance. They never, from the very beginning, Bernie Sanders wasn't given a chance. It was, you know, Hillary Clinton is the eventual nominee. We all know that. Bernie Sanders is just prolonging the Democratic nomination. We all knew that.
Sanders is a Soros time bomb. What people need to understand is he's there to enact revolutionary change. Now, some people believe that Soros is a white knight of sorts and that he thinks we need to have revolutionary change too. To save the Republic or what's left of it before it becomes overt fascism. Apparently he lived underneath it, and I looked more into it, and he was a Hitler Youth and a Jew who was a Hitler Youth who looked Aryan enough that they didn't just automatically send him to a camp. And he said it was the best and the worst time of his life. The best because every day was like, you know, you could die, so you felt like you were living it fully. And it was just a weird quote, and I remember thinking, you know, the guy's, he's a social manipulator, a billionaire, a kingpin. He's not super connected, obviously. He's more of a guy that is as high as you can get without being born into it. And he's trying to, you know, he's a plant, man. He has Move On for him, and who knows, you know, what buddies he has in Russia. And the best way to destruct the DNC is to put Bernie into it and then have a fool like Trump in there that will basically do whatever he's told. But the problem is, I think that Hillary bought Trump off. So you have all this double dealing and backstabbing, and the whole time the military industrial complex just laughs all the way to the bank. They don't care.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the thing. You know, we're dealing with a deep state. We're dealing with a big mechanism here that is going to be – it's not something we can elect. We can't elect change into the system. It's got to be something – we got to look to an alternate kind of mechanism here. And that's the problem with a candidate like Bernie Sanders, is that it takes all this angst and anger and people that understand there's something ain't right, and it kind of defeats all that momentum and that kinetic energy, I guess you can call it, and it wraps it up into a campaign that was failed from the start. Like I said, I mean, Bernie Sanders was never given a chance. Just like Ron Paul was never given a chance. I mean, Bernie Sanders was going to be there. He was going to absorb a bunch of young people's anger, and he was going to dissipate it. And that's what happened. But
what he did was he made him get all involved, Nick. And that's not going to be – I mean, barring like a war or something crazy, now all these down-ticket people are getting in, these Bernie-crats, and they're like really, really progressive, and they're seeing the cronyism, and they hate it, and they want to stamp it out. And how many people can they disappear? How many hundreds of people are going to now be reps for a couple months before their car crashes? I mean, there's going to be – what he did was too much, and I think he went to the very edge of what he could do. His book deal will soften the blow of probably ending up losing some privileges, but, you know, it's going to reverberate and have long-term consequences. He did a masterful game of chess. You're an insider when you play inside that long. He is an insider, but he's not born into it. You know, his family were poor Jews. They were not the rich Jews. If anybody knows anything about Jewry and the Jewish religion, there's essentially two kinds of Jews. One's called the Ashkenazi and the other Sephardic, and he's Sephardic. So he was the people that were persecuted by the Nazis. That was his branch of Judaism or Jewry. And as growing up as Jewish, I learned these things, man. There's a big difference. You know, there's a big difference between the long established wealthy Eastern European Jews versus the ones that were rounded up by the Nazis and just, you know, killed, and who knows what went on from World War II, Nick. The crazy crap that's still going on is insane.
Yeah, man, it's a lot to wrap your head around, but you know, it's going to be interesting to see it play out. I think that there is some good to become of the Bernie movement, and I've held that belief the entire time, because there's been a lot to come that came of the Ron Paul movement too. Definitely a different side of the spectrum, a little bit of a different message, but
where's Ron's movement now though? Like, Why didn't Rand take the reins and continue with what his father did? I mean, you can tell Rand's a good guy. He's just a little too extreme conservative in some issues that the world's moved on, and who knows what if that happened to do with his father's upbringing. I mean, Ron's more, you know, liberal than Rand is, which is kind of weird. But yeah, man, they didn't the movement. They Tea Partied it instead. They didn't let progressive conservatives have an outlet. I mean, there's such a thing as that. There's a lot of people that have absolutely no qualms with anybody of different races, religions, sexualities. They just want fiscal conservatism. They want like less taxes and smaller government as a result. And they don't want so, I mean, but the craziest thing about it is no one ever touches the military budget, which is really the biggest sponge.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems is that that movement was kind of co-opted, and you know, and that's one of the things that I'm worried about right now is the, you know, Bernie Sanders movement could be co-opted as well, and by in many aspects, I mean, Bernie is helping move that process along with the endorsement of Hillary Clinton and that kind of thing.
But she's not drawing anyone, Nick, and she's about to have some kind of nervous breakdown. She's got like dementia or something, so she may pull out any day. And he never conceded his delegate, so he slides right in as the popular pick. I mean, her health scares are going to come out any day now. So there was a lot of political movement and undercutting of people. It's going to be crazy to see what happens. If she can make it to November, I would be amazed.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about Hillary's health. So, you know, I've been seeing some of the videos, and yeah, dude, she looks like she's teetering on the edge right now.
And Bill, I mean, Bill doesn't look like he's going to, he doesn't look like he's may, he may, might not last too much longer. I mean, he looks sick. So, you know, it's possible that they've overstayed their welcome and their usefulness is run out, and the Clinton Foundation can be run by Chelsea and her husband, who is an absolute blue blood and actually is born into it. And it could have been an absorption kind of deal there where they pulled in the nefarious foundation. Now they'll break it up into a bunch of little fake charities and keep their Haitian stuff going and the Russian uranium and all that good stuff under all these little puppet corporations.
So, you know, the problem is going back to this foreign policy issue here that none of these guys can really touch on. And like we said, Bush ran on a humble foreign policy. Obama ran on like a straight-up anti-war platform. Now, the interesting thing here about the Clinton-Trump kind of paradigm is, once again, looking back at 2000, it's kind of a role reversal where it's like the Republican is less hawkish and the Democrat is looked at as the war hawk. And that's what, you know, like I mentioned, Bush kind of ran on that kind of platform and there was a role reversal there. And that's what's going on now with Trump. You know, he's been at least critical of the Iraq war, the overthrow of Gaddafi, and several other the foreign policy blunders that have gone on under Obama. And Clinton, on the other hand, is basically running on a pro-war platform. Like she's probably got to be one of the first candidates in at least in my memory that is actually running on the promise of starting up even more foreign policy issues, at least to begin with, in Syria, and then according to her rhetoric, leading into Iran, which is only like the logical, you know, the logical progression is Syria and then Iran, because they're like staunch, super staunch allies, Russia being the other staunch ally of Syria. So, I mean, Clinton is basically running on a platform of, hey, look, we're going to start up a regional war. We're going to get rid of Assad, which is going to trigger some kind of conflict with Iran, which is also going to trigger some kind of conflict with Russia. And now the most recent news, which was covered yesterday on our sister site, The Underground Reporter, it adds a little more kindle to this powder keg that is developing here in Syria. China is now announced that it's joining the Russian alliance in Syria, and it's going to begin helping training the Syrian troops and providing different types of aid to the Syrian government. This is something that Russia has been doing openly for a while now, for a long time, actually, since the 50s. And it's been suspected that China was already kind of covertly helping out that here and there in Syria. But now they're openly saying, look, we're going to go in and we're going to help them out militarily and with other types of aid. So, you know, looking back at this foreign policy issue here, the next president is sitting on a time bomb in the Middle East, and Hillary Clinton is already running on a platform of, hey, we're going to make this a lot worse. And so that's the scenario that we're kind of being thrust into right now with the fact that Trump is more than likely going to lose, whether it be on purpose or he just doesn't want the job and he didn't think he was going to get this far, or whether he's just that stupid and he has no tact or his advisors are purposely misleading, whatever the case may be. Clinton is very, very much likely, unless in the case, as you were mentioning, DB, some kind of health incident or something, even in that case, I don't see Sanders being allowed in. I mean, maybe her VP pick or maybe someone else.
It depends, though. I mean, who knows, dude? I mean, really, maybe they're thinking, oh, crap, if she does get in, we could get involved in some nuclear exchanges, at least with Sanders. We can continue these proxy conventionals and hope to eventually just overwhelm people with technical superiority. I have no idea, man. Like, at some point, do even crazy psychopaths reach a limit where they're like, oh, shit?
Maybe. Maybe not. But, you know, the point I want to make here is that the next president, and it's, you know, most likely going to be Clinton, is going to be sitting on what could very well turn into World War III in the Middle East, well, at least starting in the Middle East. The other factor here to look into is what's going on in the South China Sea. Very high tensions running between China and Western allied nations, including like Japan and the Philippines and other, you know, TPP countries and stuff like that. Big time war stuff going on, and it's creating a stage for something major to happen under the next president. And the problem I see, as you mentioned, DB, you know, where is the Ron Paul movement now? It's pretty much, it's not completely diminished. It's Ron Paul's still out there making waves and here and there. And, you know, the Bernie Sanders movement, as I mentioned, I'm worried that it'll be co-opted. But I think the solution here is that we don't need to make political movements. I think the solution here is to make counter-political movements. Very much so as what was going on like in the anti-war movement of the 60s, and a lot of the social movements that went on there in the late 60s were kind of counter-political movements, and I think those are a little more effective, even though, you know, we know they were sabotaged, we know the FBI infiltrated the Black Panthers, we know the Nixon administration purposely created the war on drugs to go after the anti-war movement, the Black Liberation Movement. You know, those kind of things are going to happen. But I think counter-political movements are more effective because they can't be co-opted by the Democrats or the Tea Party or, you know, the Bernie Sanders movement that is they're looking to fold into the Democratic Party. I mean, these kind of things are something we need to think about in the future, where we're going to put our time and our resources and our work into. Are we going to feed into this political atmosphere? Are we going to get out of this political atmosphere and fight counter politically? Is a big question I think that a lot of people need to start asking. And with that question in mind, where do we go? I mean, where is the direction that we're going to go in? That's what, you know, that's the big question. I'm not sure of. I know the problems that we're facing. I know that we need to decentralize power, that we need to decentralize economics. Everybody kind of knows that. But the direction that we need to go, I think that's still up for debate in many ways. I want to take some calls on this. Let's see if anyone in the audience has any ideas, because you know, I know all the problems, and we analyze this situation on a regular basis here on the Anti-Media Radio. But what are some solutions to these problems? The call-in number is 718-717-8296. The phone line should be up and working, so if you want to call in, give us your feedback about what you think is, plaguing us. Once again, 718-717-8296. If you want to call in. We're not going to be joined tonight by Jake because Jake's a little busy on some family stuff. He just moved out to the West Coast, back to the West Coast from New Mexico. I'm hoping to go visit him in Portland pretty soon here, but he's not going to be joining us tonight. But other than that, we're going to take some calls. If anyone wants to call in, feel free. Other than that, we're going to move on to some other news stories. DB, you got anything else on your mind?
I think it'll be – what will happen is eventually it'll be like an economic revolt of sorts, because a couple things right now are driving the college-educated American millennial into a decision right now where they're being forced to have, you know, they're underemployed, so they usually have two part-time jobs or something that doesn't give them benefits. And then they're expected to carry also healthcare costs. And then if they don't, they're penalized at the end of the year. And then they're getting taxed at the same time on their paychecks. So they're kind of wondering where that's going. And then they're also under student debt that they can't get out of, even if they go bankrupt. So, I mean, just from speaking with young professionals here in my course of my job all the time, a lot of the people even here, which is in the middle of the heartlands, you know, right smack in the middle of the country, where we're pretty insulated from a lot of things. People realize that it's just getting tougher. They're not making quite as much. I mean, two people working full time can get a modest house. Before, it was something really nice and the guy just worked. I mean, people understand that stuff going on, and they're understanding that we're being robbed and that our country's being sold out and jobs are moving out. And it's just going to eventually become either the people right the ship, and it's probably going to end up having to be by force at some level. Even if it's just blocking cities, we're still going to have to put our bodies in the way. Or it's just going to get to the point where it gets so bad, everybody's just going to, I guess, move to Detroit and buy a $500 house and put solar panels on the roof, right?
Yeah, dude, that's the thing, is economics underlines civilization. I mean, looking historically back at, like, when man first came out of its tribal nomadic kind of ways, it was back when they first started coming up with this idea of agriculture. You know, the timetable is debated, you know, let's just say 10,000 years ago ish when mankind first started developing crops and learning how to farm, and we started building villages and then cities and then city-states and then countries and then empires. It's kind of just like a progression from there. The underlying thing here is the agricultural business, farming. It's pretty much the most rudimentary form of economics, and then trading your farmed goods with other people's goods that they have. That's really the underlying factor to every civilization. It's coming up with an economic system. And so it only makes sense that if we're going to talk about a counter-political system, that we have to talk about counter-economics. And that's the direction, in my opinion, where it's the easiest place to start, too. I mean, it's as easy as just depriving companies that you know are not doing a service to the country. Like, you know, let's just say Exxon, or let's just say Walmart, or Goldman Sachs, or, you know, plenty of examples of shitty companies, Monsanto, that have either caused us economic hardship, have messed up the environment, have ripped off somebody you know, or are underpaying people, whatever the cause may be. I mean, the easiest place to start is just voting with your, literally with your dollars. And that, in fact, may be the most influential vote you can cast right now, because casting your vote in this election, whether you cast a vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson or another independent party, or even for Trump as a protest against Clinton, it's pretty much ineffective. Because on one hand, it is effective because you're casting a protest vote. You're saying, look, I'm not consenting to Hillary Clinton starting up World War III. And by not voting for her, you're not casting your consent for that. And for that, you know, it's effective. It's conscious. It saves your conscience some trouble. You could sleep at night. You feel like you don't have blood on your hands. The problem is you're still going to be paying taxes into the system that is going to be paying for the bombs that are dropping on Libya and Syria, and who knows where it's going to lead from there under the next president. But what you can do is counter economics. learn how to do business dealings where you don't have to pay taxes. Instead, redirect money that maybe you're not paying in taxes into some causes that maybe you feel good about, like helping orphanages or helping homeless people or helping poor people eat, or you know, various different things you could do with your money.
And trade. If you have skills, trade. There was like a guy yesterday that I saw on the side of the road, and he said, you know, donations accepted, but I also was a carpenter. And he looked like an old grizzled guy, all beat up. But I mean, at least he was putting it out there. He'd be willing to like maybe do like a job or something. And you know, I thought about it. If I had need for a guy of work, what would he work for? Like $100 for a good day of work? I mean, he's probably pretty skilled. So there's all kinds of opportunities in the alternative markets where you can trade too, you know, with people that are skilled, especially in like home construction and stuff. They love doing that. Like plumbers and electricians trade off all the time for favors. So you can do that stuff with people that know what they're doing for things you don't know how to do.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is that, you know, everybody knows that the political system is bought and paid for. Everybody knows that we have this huge problem of money in politics. Everybody knows that the oligarchy is served by the government. That, you know, there's a reason why these people spend billions and billions of dollars to influence outcomes of elections. Because when the politicians that they finance get into office, they make them sweetheart deals. I mean, everybody knows that the entire political system, that our entire empire, our foreign policy, our military, our wars, and all that shit, everybody knows it's about money and resources, right? Like, pretty much. And if you don't know that, I'm sorry, but either you're a child or you just don't pay attention for shit. But you should know that by now if you're an adult. So everybody knows this. The entire political system is about money, and therefore we should think about that and use our money to counter the strength of the political system. And so that to me is where the power of your vote really lies, is in your economic choices and the way you choose to spend your money, the way you choose to live, the way you choose to drive your car and commute, and the way you choose to eat. If you go to Walmart to do your grocery shopping, well, you're casting your vote for Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry to say it. Because, first of all, I mean, ironically, Clinton was on the board of Walmart for a good period of time. And she also used to be a lawyer that represented Walmart for another period of time. But if you're putting your money and your groceries into Walmart, well, then you're just buying into the status quo. If you go and you grow your own food, or you go to the farmer's market, or you go to a local farm, or you go an alternate route like that, well, then you're casting your money in a different direction, and at the very least, it's diverted away from directly going right up to the top where Walmart lobbies the shit out of the government to get their legislation passed and to get all these kind of, you know, labor laws and welfare and everything Walmart uses to subsidize itself with the government, with your tax dollars. Not only are you giving them your money and they profit from it, they turn around and use your money to use the government to subsidize itself. And so your tax dollars also go into Walmart. And that's how they get away with paying their people so little money, because the taxpayer subsidizes a huge chunk of the workforce. And so, yeah, if you go to a farmer's market, they may be paying taxes on it, and they may end up, you know, the money may end up going up to the top somewhere somehow, but not directly like it does with Walmart. So I think the most effective way is countering this political system with economics, and figuring out one thing that would be pretty interesting is to figure out, you know, where the money goes and how it's being spent, so that you can kind of target where you want to deprive money from the federal government. If the drug war is your big, you know, beef with the government, then you can find out how you can spend your money to deprive the government from collecting taxes to fight the drug war. If it's foreign policy, if it's the empire, you can find out, you know, how you can spend your money so that it's not winding up in the hands of Lockheed Martin and Boeing and all these people that build the bombs that are dropped over in Yemen and Syria, Libya. This is the way that we can really make them feel the pain and make them actually reform, because casting our votes for, you know, Hillary Clinton or for Donald Trump and saying, oh, well, you know, I want you guys to go up there and change it for me, That tactic has been tried for a long time. In fact, I mean, we've been trying that tactic out for thousands of years now. The democratic experiment is a couple thousand years old. It's been not working out very well for a lot of people for a long period of time. I mean, it works out for a short period of time. And then, you know, fascism, it becomes an outgrowth of a democratic system. And, you know, that's basically where we're bordering on right now. I mean, we're getting really close to that point where, you know, we got an oligarchy and all that. But are we going to become an outright overt fascism or an overt empire? Or are we going to continue to pretend that we're not an empire and stuff? I mean, that's the choice that we're dealing with right now. Or are we going to start really thinking about how we can really change this political system? And then, like I said, it's got to be economic, man. That's the only way these guys are going to listen is we bankrupt the corporations. Corporations can't feed the money into the political system. And then the politicians have to start listening. That's the only way it's going to work, in my opinion. So, moving on here. Interesting movement going on with cannabis activism. This is our top viral story of the day. You know, of course, it's hard to get, you know, these really hard to digest geopolitical philosophical stories viral. We got this pretty awesome article here by Alice Saez on the anti-media about this this number that people are writing on their hands. I'm sure everybody online on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram has seen this by now, especially if you have friends that are cannabis users and stuff like that. Probably 90% of my friends use cannabis, and I'm not afraid to say it. I, on occasion, partake myself. But people are writing this number on their hands, 6630507. DB, have you seen this yet?
Yeah, I posted that. So why not make it viral and hashtag it? Because it's an important batting number, because it shows not only how two-sided it is, but essentially how mercenary it is, how the DEA is an alphabet agency, is a private corporation, and it is structured that way so that it can be compartmentalized in a way, and they can say, oh, it went off the tracks and we didn't have control of it. Yes, you did. You funded it. So if the government tries to say the DEA is now enforcing rules that they don't say are okay, which the federal courts just said that you can't prosecute for it, but they're going to continue to raid and make arrests that aren't probably not going to stick anymore. I don't think the private prison corporations are going to allow the business as usual to stop. It may result in less lengthy prison sentences, but you can be sure that the vulnerable members of society they've always been locking up are going to still continue to be prosecuted for whatever other petty crimes they'll associate with the fact that they federally are carrying something federally illegal, according to something people never voted on and we never said was okay in the first place.
Yeah, man. So this whole campaign is kind of about, it's a kind of a reaction to the DEA's recent ruling that keeping cannabis as a Schedule I drug, which means that it has zero medicinal value and that it's basically ripe for abuse, which anybody that uses cannabis knows that it's... First of all, not ripe for abuse in, for the most part. I mean, I have friends that all they do is smoke weed all day, and yeah, maybe they're abusing it. First of all, they're not killing themselves. I don't know anybody that's ever died or been hurt by cannabis. And second of all, the real tragedy here is that there's a bunch of people that really get medical benefits from using cannabis, especially children with epilepsy and people that have seizures. People that have a bunch of kind of mental issues, people that have anxiety, people that have depression have all found kind of help in this stuff. So why are they keeping it illegal? That's the question. That's the movement. Thank you guys all for tuning in. Anti-Media Radio. Peace. Stereo.
JJ Inc.